This is KWMR, 90.5 Point Reyes Station, 89.9 Bolinas, 92.3 in the beautiful San Geronimo Valley. We are listener-supported West Marin Community Radio, streaming live and archiving online at kwmr.org. And I'll just make a brief mention that you can get the KWMR mobile app for iOS or Android, and you can listen anywhere there. It works pretty well. Local programming for KWMR is provided by our community members and by Point Reyes Farmstead Cheese Company. Online at pointreyescheese.com. That's pointreyescheese.com. Well, coming up in just a moment, we've got today's episode of Epicenter. I'll be speaking with Amy Callis, an infectious disease scholar, excuse me, I'm just stumbling over my words, consultant for the County of Marin, and we'll also be hearing, as always, on these Mondays at 11:15 from Dr. Lisa Santora with Marin Health and Human Services. But I do want to make a quick mention that we have wrapped up our spring pledge drive successfully, I might add, and a big thank you to all our supporters out there for helping us meet our fundraising goal. So congratulations. Thank you, everyone. And if you are still inspired to contribute, you're welcome to do so, of course, at kwmr.org. And now, Epicenter. This is Epicenter on KWMR, West Marin Community Radio. Epicenter is rebroadcast Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m., featuring a wide array of community and public affairs. I'm your host, Jeff Manson, and today our guest is Amy Callis, a consultant with the County of Marin. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
Thank you so much for joining us on the air.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So we've landed at a very interesting place. I mean, it's been an interesting year, goes without saying, from a public health perspective. The vaccine has been rolling out for COVID-19 and seemingly, from my perspective, fairly successfully. I know some people, there's a certain amount of anxiety for folks that have signed up and are hoping to get the vaccine. There's another anxiety among folks that are perhaps hesitant to get the vaccine and wondering about that. I thought we could sort of wrap all that together. We'll get an update about some of the other details about what's happening in the state of the county from Dr. Santora later in the program. But I'd love to start with your perspective. And I know you have a unique relationship to West Marin. You've done a lot of work out here. And
I have.
I'm happy to hear about some of those community resources that you can share with our listeners as well.
Sure. So I've been working with the county for over a year now on its COVID response. And as you mentioned, the vaccine phase is very exciting for us because I think it's going to be a game changer. And we have two major issues that we're working on from an education standpoint. And the first one is for the vast majority of folks who are supportive and anxious to get the vaccine. It's just sort of helping them understand the process and helping them understand why it's taking a little longer than they would like. And then the second piece of that is we do have some folks who are unsure. They have totally legitimate questions, and they are looking to get that information so that they can make an informed decision about vaccination. And so we're sort of working two angles with the education right now.
And are you seeing, I know it's hard to make generalizations, but what are the main concerns that people who are hesitant about getting the vaccine, what are the concerns that they have that you're hearing?
The biggest issue people have who have questions, who are a little unsure, is around safety. They wonder how, in normal times, our vaccine production, vaccine development can take a decade or longer. And so the idea that we were able to do this within months, they have questions about how that can safely happen. And I'm happy to walk you through that. I think it might be helpful for your listeners to hear how we do know that these vaccines are safe.
You know, I agree. I think it'd be great to hear some of that. And I just jump in, not to pontificate from my end too much, but, you know, it's been such a difficult year. And the prior administration's, let's say, opaque strategy toward pandemic emergency response, I think, really made things complicated for folks in your job of public outreach and letting people know about things.
For sure.
And I think something, I guess point being, is something that's been overshadowed in this process is just how remarkable the project, the global project of developing this vaccine in record time is, you know, and you hear people sort of in the shadowy corners of the internet saying it's, you know, they've got all kinds of ideas. Folks have all kinds of ideas, and rightfully so, as I understand. But really, I am struck by this is a triumph of ingenuity in science. Am I right in saying that?
You are right in saying that. And so what I would say is the idea of creating a vaccine during an emergency really came about with Ebola. And so the West African Ebola outbreak, and I was actually one of the folks who worked on those clinical trials in Sierra Leone. And what we found then is that you can safely create a vaccine in record time in emergencies. But to your point, it's no less a phenomenal feat. The amount of work and effort that goes into this, I always tell people it's a little bit like building the train tracks in front of a train that's barreling down on you at 80 miles an hour. Like it's still a pretty incredible feat.
Yeah. And one that I can imagine was incentivized to happen just because of the global spread of this terrible disease. It's, you know, you see an outbreak such as Ebola, huge and dangerous and heartbreaking as it is, was relatively speaking localized, at least to one corner of one hemisphere. This, however, has been something that the entire globe, I've heard there were cases in Antarctica even, has had to deal with.
You know, look, Ebola was very serious, and we learned a lot of lessons, and a lot of the reason it was localized is because we were able to mobilize quickly over there. But let's get honest, right? It's a drop in the bucket compared to what's happening with COVID. And this is far more serious, and I don't think there is a country or a community that has been left untouched at this stage of the game.
Absolutely. I'm curious if you could speak a little bit to the financial aspect, because one thing that I've heard some people who feel reservations about a vaccine and the rollout and maybe are nervous about the speed at which it's been rolled out sometimes make a mention, thinking about, say, like Big Pharma making a profit on it or something like that. What's your impression, or could you speak to that?
I can speak to that. So, you know, my background, just so you're aware, I worked for the Centers for Disease Control on vaccine-preventable diseases for about a decade. And so I have a deep knowledge of how this all works. And one of the things I will say is there is this pervasive belief that Big Pharma, that this is a giant vaccine profit engine for them. But the reality is vaccines are really not where they make their money. They make their money in other drugs, in sort of lifestyle drugs. That's where the money comes from. So vaccines really are a public good. And it's not, there's not a lot of money to be made in them. Some of them were given financial incentives to help them speed up the research and to help them invest in production quickly. That's not unusual, though. We do that type of thing in emergencies, whether it's health-related or other emergencies. We do very often help corporations and companies that are integral to the solution, whatever, you know, if it's an economic solution. We've often helped banks, or we've, you know, so the idea that they got government help in of itself is not unusual. And I will say that I promise folks, vaccines are not where they're making their money.
Yeah, it's my impression. I mean, anything that you just get, you know, one or in many cases, two doses of, it seems like a lot more money is being spent to get this developed and rolled out and distributed than anyone is going in anyone's pocket. So thank you for that perspective. Friends out there, if you're just joining me, my guest this morning or today is Amy Callis, who is an infectious disease expert who's consulting with the County of Marin about the vaccine rollout. I wonder if we could zoom in a little bit here to our community of West Marin. And talk about some of the community resources that are available for folks out there. And I know Lisa Santoro may touch on some of this later in the program, but I wonder if you had anything to share with regards to that.
We, As a county, one of the things that has so impressed me about Marin is its commitment to making sure we're reaching every single resident. And there is a perception that Marin is relatively homogenous, but the reality is very different. We have really diverse communities, particularly out in West Marin. And so we have been working with different community-based organizations to help both get the word out, help educate folks, but also bring those mobile clinics and things like that. And I'll let Lisa touch more on the logistics and the operations. But in terms of our outreach, our community outreach, we deliver weekly webinars in English and in Spanish. People can go online and find those. Everybody's welcome, where we answer a lot of the questions about safety and side effects and how these vaccines were developed. But we also do outreach with particular groups that are struggling with understanding the process. So we've been working with a lot of the agricultural workers out in West Marin. We've been delivering a lot of that information in Spanish and working directly with some of those companies. We also are working, we haven't gotten it fully up and running yet, but we're working with community and faith-based organizations to reach a lot of our older folks who maybe are not internet savvy, who might not have as easy a time accessing this information. And we're working with their trusted sources, who are often faith-based leaders or community leaders, to make sure that they get the information they also need.
I want to circle back around to some of the underserved communities that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed throughout this pandemic, of course, there has been the dual cultural evolutions, let's say. One, in an epidemiological front, I think it's been a crash course in infectious disease for many folks in the general public. But also, you know, it's just I see that I feel the two in tandem, the awakening of social justice concepts and ideas. And I think there's a really interesting intersection in terms of infectious disease and vaccine hesitancy with communities of color, of course. And I just wonder if you could mention a little bit about that, because I think it's such an interesting part of our history that's sort of bubbled to the surface, perhaps, and another thing that we are navigating in this time.
Yeah, we are. And I don't want to overemphasize this, because I do want to say that we have a lot of communities of color that are clamoring for this vaccine. But we also need to recognize that hesitancy is often born of history. And there are historical issues that have occurred throughout medicine where our minority communities have not been treated as fairly as other communities. And so there is some distrust. And we recognize that. And we have been working very, very hard to integrate people of color in the communications process, in making sure that we reach different communities with the folks that they do trust, whether it's their pastor or a community leader, working with those groups. We have a community advisory board that's been helping us do that work. And I think that that's really important, because we need to remember that health is a human right, and we have to be able to give folks both the information they need to make an informed decision and the access they must have in order to be able to avail themselves of all of these prevention activities, and whether it's the vaccine or it's testing.
I'm curious about folks that have received the vaccine now. Any advice you'd give to folks? I know, because I've heard, you know, mixed things. On one hand, you know, the CDC has some very encouraging new evidence suggesting that, you know, small groups of people who are all fully vaccinated, it's safe for them to gather together. And then there's other reports out there that, you know, it's still good to wear a mask in public. Could you break down a little bit of that? What's the current recommended protocol?
Yeah. So what I'm telling folks is, behind closed doors, when you know that you are with a small group of fully vaccinated people, you can safely gather. When you're outside, so I am vaccinated. I was lucky enough to be vaccinated. When I am outside, I still wear a face covering. And there are a number of reasons why we do this. One is social norming, right? We still, the majority of us in America still are not vaccinated. We need to continue to wear our masks social distance, wash our hands frequently, just a little bit longer. And by modeling that behavior, we're not giving the message to folks that it's okay, we can let up on these things. So a great part of this is social norming and sort of that community influence. We need to still see everybody do it. Because honestly, when we're out and about, we don't have a badge. We don't know who's vaccinated, yeah, not vaccinated, absolutely, right? And, you know, we also are learning about this disease and the variants that are coming and how these vaccines interact with them. And just as a safety protocol, while we're still getting this disease under control, we're not there yet. We still have a fair way to go. We just need to continue to do these things a little bit longer.
I think that's really well said. It's interesting being here at just about the year anniversary, a little bit after it, of the first shelter-in-place orders that came through. And I'm remember a lot of stuff coming up that I'm remembering. And one of them was my reaction initially to, A, needing to wear a mask and watching others wearing masks. You know, and I remember there was a pivot where at first we didn't – it wasn't understood that you wear a mask to protect others, that,
right,
you know, thinking, oh, I need to wear this mask to keep myself safe, which is also true. But I think that's the thing that's continued for me. Now I see someone in a mask and I think, oh, they're caring about the health of their community. And I,
right,
and to a degree, I mean, at the risk of speaking too much from my own perspective, I feel the same about people taking a vaccine and weighing those risks, right? It's about risk and benefit.
Correct.
Management, I think. And the idea of developing herd immunity, and we've all had to make sacrifices this year and in order to do so, both to protect ourselves and our loved ones, but our community at large. So,
yeah, I think that's an important one. And that's with infectious disease. This is often a common theme is, you know, infectious diseases, you know, they're equal opportunity killers. And so we need to be thinking as a collective, as a community, as a caring group of people rather than individuals that stand alone because we just don't.
Absolutely. Well, Amy Callis, I so appreciate your perspective. It's an honor to have you on KWMR. We've got Dr. Lisa Santora on the other line. I'm going to have her come in to give us a little update on the state of the county. You're welcome to hang on the air, but I know you're also a very busy person, so if you need to get on to something else, that's fine too.
You're in good hands with Lisa. She's got all the information, so I'm going to go ahead and hop off now. But thanks so much.
I hope to have you on again sometime. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care.
And joining us now here on Epicenter, Dr. Lisa Santora. Welcome back to the KWMR airwaves.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
So far, so good. It's a beautiful day, and I love getting these kind of perspectives. Amy Callis's viewpoint, and just what a wealth of knowledge in terms of a global understanding of, you know, I'd love to get another story hearing about her experience being on the front lines with Ebola back in the day. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, we really are fortunate. We have a very expert team in Marin County and have the benefit of amazing consultants with that depth of experience in pandemic response and, you know, internationally, and to that has been informing our response since the beginning. So we have great talent in Marin County supporting our efforts.
And I think it can never be acknowledged enough how grateful we are here at KWMR and our wider listening audience is to have this great partnership with the County of Marin, getting this good information on. Speaking of, I'm sure folks are curious about sort of the current state of the county regarding COVID and the vaccine, and I thought you could bring us up to speed.
Well, unfortunately, last week we saw a significant uptick in cases and new cases. Not that is currently threatening us to move from orange to red tier, but really the next 2 weeks and the activities of residents as it relates to their spring break travel is really going to be the determining factor if we do shift back into red, if this uptick is just a small blip, or is it what we're hearing at a national level and international level that it represents the fourth wave and people's travel and continued exposure to COVID-19 shifts us back and needing to be more restrictive in some of the activities that are allowed in the county. So mm-hmm. I'm cautiously optimistic that we are going to hang in orange, primarily because of the success of our vaccination efforts, which is increasing that herd immunity in our community.
And speaking of vaccines, how is the rollout going? I know I'm hearing anecdotally a lot of folks out here in West Marin have been able to get vaccinated, and then others sort of are nervously awaiting their chance. What's coming in the next few weeks in terms of the vaccine rollout?
Well, West Marin is faring very well. We are analyzing our vaccine rates by community, and more than 50% of West Marin residents have been vaccinated, so it's one of our more successful communities, and we're really excited about that. And we've also have partnered with many of your community-based organizations to bring mobile vaccination out into West Marin to make sure we reach some of the more hard-to-reach populations, which will also include people who are homebound. And lastly, we have a very strong partnership with both Coastal Health Alliance and West Marin Medical Center, who have been receiving vaccines, and more vaccine will be coming into those networks. So we're really excited about that progress, and I think it reflects the success overall in Marin County of achieving vaccination rates, where as of today, it's not posted on our website because our website lags, but 60% of Marin County residents over the age of 16 have been vaccinated, and over 30% of residents in Marin County have already received two doses of their vaccine. So we really are leading the state in those vaccination rates, which again will hopefully will buffer us from returning COVID activity as people are returning from travel abroad and to other states.
But of course, I think you're right in emphasizing that this is, in some ways, a precarious moment. As much good news as we have, I just know so many people are just ready to get out there. Spring is springing. The trees are blooming. But we're not quite there yet in terms of a full return to normalcy. It seems like it's an important time for folks to sort of double down their efforts. We've gone this far. Would you agree with that assessment of the moment?
Absolutely. We need four more weeks.
Yeah.
If we can have 4 weeks of people continuing to hunker down, they don't need to completely hunker down. It's beautiful outside. We know COVID loathes the outdoors, so spending time in nature and seeing wildflowers blossom and hiking and biking and all the activities we love. To focus on those activities and to delay travel, especially to areas where we either have unknown COVID-19 activity, like in Mexico, as well as where there's known to be higher COVID activity, like in Arizona and in Florida. There's absolutely known areas that have greater risk of returning not only COVID-19 into Marin County, but also new variants. And this is really important, as Amy probably mentioned. This is a very flat earth. We have travel already happening between areas where there's different variants and surges, and we just need these four more weeks to stick together to get us to a vaccination rate, aiming for that 80% vaccination rate for eligible adults. And we are seeing increasing vaccine supplies. So it's so close. We don't want to fumble now as we're just heading into the end zone.
Great analogy. And to me, 4 weeks doesn't sound all that long at this point, to be honest. It's like, oh, yeah, we've been at it for quite a number of weeks here. I wonder if you could speak a little bit to the news about the different variants in terms of how it is in California. I know there have been more infectious variants that have appeared, as you know, we all are quite aware, globally. And how is that complicating our recovery efforts here in Marin County?
The challenge with some of the variants is that if the variant spread exceeds the pace of vaccination, then you have this risk of that fourth wave. And again, in Marin County, because of the success of our partnerships, our vaccination rate has been keeping pace with the introduction of COVID-19 activity, including new variants. We haven't had any outbreaks related to any particular variant. And the good news is the same way you protect yourself from one variant is the same way you protect yourself from another variant. It's following the public health guidelines, wearing your face covering, washing your hands, minimizing physical distancing, maximizing social distancing and trying to, limit your gatherings to less than three households. So it's the same guidance that's in place. That's the good news. What variants try to do is these viruses try to mutate so they can be more contagious and spread more quickly. And we already know that COVID-19 spreads so quickly. Just compare it to the flu, how quickly COVID has spread and compared to how flu normally is. We didn't see flu at all this season, because when we wore masks and we were more vigilant in our own protective behaviors, it didn't allow a less contagious virus like the flu to spread in our community. So we already know COVID is already very virulent or very transmissible. What the new mutations is trying to even make it more virulent or more contagious. And again, what we have is our behaviors to protect us and then the vaccine to protect us.
And it's another one of those lessons, I think, I hope, that many of us have learned in the past year is how to prevent disease, and not just COVID, but like you say, even the common cold and the seasonal flu. I think I'm among many who might continue wearing masks in certain circumstances, maybe like if I ever get on a plane again. I think I probably will, you know, in the sort of cultural norms that we see in other parts of the world, like Japan, places like that, where people do wear face masks regularly, because it's been kind of nice to not get the flu this year or a cold, knock on wood. I wonder, this might be too big of a topic in the moment remaining, but I've heard some people talking about our immune response, right? So in a normal year, we're exposed to all these different things. And this year, because we've been using these good measures to keep ourselves protected from COVID-19, my sense is we have been exposed to fewer illnesses. Does that leave us more vulnerable at some point in the future to, say, a common cold or a flu or some of the more run-of-the-mill things that go around?
I don't think so. I think that we are not perfect in our behaviors. No one's perfect.
Right.
And so we're always going to be exposed to different viruses and different bacterial infections. But I think we all have seen, if we did not see strep outbreaks in the schools. We haven't seen flu outbreaks. We haven't had another known one that we track as RSV. It's a respiratory virus, and we haven't seen it. And so to your point, we also are looking at, you know, this new role of face coverings, especially where we have our normal bread and butter business in communicable disease has been reporting strep pneumonia and RSV in our school environments. And so how can we, you know, what lessons can we learn now and move forward? So I don't think our immune systems are not being challenged enough. I think there's always enough bugs in the community to keep our immune systems strong. And again, our protective behaviors aren't perfect. And again, there's a lot that we could potentially learn to even, I think even our own behaviors when we toughed it out in the past, going to work with runny noses and things which would be considered rude and insulting, which in the past we used to accept that someone came to work, you know, with symptoms.
Sure, absolutely.
With COVID. So yeah. At this point, we've all learned a lot that, you know, you should stay home with your runny nose and not spread germs. Or if you have to go in, you should be wearing a face covering if you have to go in for a short purpose. So I think we've learned a lot.
And so many places, this radio station included among them, have learned just how doable some amount of remote work can be. So it's just a fascinating year. I'm curious to see what this next year holds for us, and hopefully it'll be some positive growth manifest in our communities. Dr. Lisa Santora, thank you so much for coming on the air week in and week out. We really appreciate these valuable updates. Anything you'd like to share with our listeners just in the brief moments we have before we've got to go to our next program?
Just focusing on out-of-state sports travel, that is the primary cause of a lot of this uptick in cases that we're seeing. We know how important sports are to adolescents and families, and they've identified alternate activities that are allowable in other states. But we are continuing to see students returning from out-of-state competitions with private clubs, and they're exposed to COVID in those scenarios. And so I think it's just really let's work together these last 4 weeks. We're almost there, and that will allow us, you know, to move into a much more normal summer and hopefully almost a return to our new normal in the fall, where we'll see sports being played more consistently. And I'm looking forward to that for myself and my kids, as being engaged in sports. But the decision to go out of state, the decisions not to follow our guidance, is what's causing this last risk that we might have to enter into the red zone. And our biggest concern is just not only the health and well-being. Of course, we don't want anyone to unnecessarily get infected with COVID-19, but when we have to move back in tiers, it's a threat to businesses that are finally striving to get back on, you know, on their feet and being able to generate revenue and have their staff come back to work because of what is now allowable in Orange. And we really are looking forward to Marin to be one of the first counties to get to the yellow tier, which again